you fear the zombie uprising? Are you prepared to survive what's coming? If you listen very carefully, you might just make it out alive. This is Zompocalypse Now.
Do you see Daryl?
I see Daryl.
Yep, there's Daryl.
If I don't make it back, I want him to know I tried.
Okay, so there's a boat on the ocean, and Daryl is in that boat on the ocean. He comes ashore.
It's like he washed up on Normandy.
A place called the Commonwealth. It's in America.
America!
Oh, fuck you, Americans.
It's a bad decision.
Now we fight some people off. Oh, looks like somebody was running.
Another compound of crazies.
Oh, this is nuns, though. Oh, a fucking kid.
American. Trouvez-le autour.
Je crois. Cherche rien.
I know you can get in there safely.
Oh, God.
He's ready. What?
To lead the revival of humanity.
Oh, God.
Things up. Things are changing, you know?
Maybe we're the same that way. Broken until the world ended.
Take it. I don't make it back.
So we're gonna make a stop at the Moulin Rouge.
I want him to know I tried. Hell, I'm still trying.
Well, it's going to be the prettiest Walking Dead show, no question.
It promises to be among our most pedantic episodes yet.
Everything feels extra fancy when it's in French.
I'm a little concerned that it looks an awful lot like The Last of Us, where you've got a quest to take the child who can save humanity. Now, considering how much The Last of Us borrows from The Walking Dead.
Yes.
It seems a little bit like an Oberus going on here.
All right. So, except for there's a level of chosen oneness that The Last of Us leans into pretty immediately that The Walking Dead has never leaned into.
What we're getting here, because it's like this, you must take the boy. You must take the boy to the place where the boy will save us all.
I've seen that on another one, too. It's the one that Black Summer's a spinoff of.
Z Nation.
The Z Nation, right. It was the very first episode. Take this person to wherever because they hold the key.
Now, admittedly, this is a very common genre trope. So.
I think it's fucking plagiarism at this point because that's like key plot point. You can't just be doing that.
It definitely looks fantastic. And as an excuse for Norman Reedus to, you know, hang out in France, I think it's an excellent one.
Someday their editor or their color guy is going to figure out how to use a color besides gray and blue.
That's a lovely, sweet, innocent thought, Curtis. And I really feel so strongly that your positivity and hopefulness for the future is such a beautiful thing. And I hate the thought of it being crushed. But that's what we've come to expect from the Walking Dead universe. So that was the Daryl Dixon trailer. I think it looks great visually.
Let's face it. We're going to watch it. And then we're just going to have to deal with the backlash of watching it.
Every episode I'm going to be going, look, kids, Big Ben, Parliament.
Yeah.
Although I will say this, that so far, the most recent spinoffs of The Walking Dead are actually better than the earlier spinoffs of The Walking Dead. Now, that is, in fact, not a high bar.
Yeah, there's a little bit of damning with faint praise there, buddy.
Just a lot of it. Hi, folks. This is the Zompocalypse Now podcast. We have just finished watching the Daryl Dixon trailer. Now we are going to talk about the third episode of Dead City, the Negan and Maggie Take Manhattan spinoff. The name of this episode is People Are Resources. People Are a Resource, which definitely fits into a lot of different things with The Walking Dead, even leaving aside the fact that we get our trip to Bartertown.
And go run Bartertown!
Which, in fairness to The Walking Dead, again, Bartertown was not the first to Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome was not the first to posit the idea using
methane.
Various sources to make methane as a fuel in a post-apocalyptic environment. But it is, of course, the one that most leaps to mind when the Croat explains the plot.
Master Blaster, run Bartertown!
I was waiting for a Master Blaster.
We do not have a Tina Turner analog so far. And
No, the Croat is Master Blaster.
I know. We don't have a Tina Turner analog.
No, yes. That is not a character that exists. I don't know what they're trying to do. It's like they've taken the Negan redemption arc and turned it into the Maggie assassination arc. You know, it's like they want, like, if somebody in the writer's room said, well, both characters can't be right. Both characters can't have a point. Somebody's got to be the asshole. And market research has shown Negan is more popular.
Yeah.
And it irritates me.
Well, there's a number of things that happened this episode that are, they're a little bit broad stroke, heavy-handed things that are a little surprising. I say that, but I guess really not. This is the Walking Dead universe. I'm currently trying to get my head around the fact that a teenage girl rode across the Hudson River in a cooler. And when she pulled this off, is it the Hudson? I think it's the Hudson. Probably not. It's a bigger body of water. Anyway, she rode across in a cooler with a board, and on the island of Manhattan, which is almost 14 miles long and 2.5 miles wide, managed to stumble into the one person on the island who could lead her directly to Maggie and Negan.
Oh, because Native American.
I mean,
track that shit.
The Walking Dead has a problem with distance and time. We've established this a few thousand times. But I've been to New York. It's a big place. I mean, 13 miles by 2.5 miles, that's 22 square miles, kids. And she just finds
Did you use new math or old math for that? Because I don't even know what's
happening. I looked it up. I completely did not do the math. I looked up the Wikipedia'd it. But, I mean, there's a whole lot of plot and wavium going on in this episode. And yet, we got an answer to a crucial question, and I'm very pleased to hear that Negan's wife did not get fridged. She just got put on the bus, or the wagon train. The wagon train to Missouri. And as someone who lives in Missouri, you know, that's not a terrible idea. There's a whole lot of empty space in Missouri.
That's true.
There's a whole lot of not full of humans and therefore not full of undead people.
I thought you were talking about people's craniums there.
Well, this is a state full of a whole lot of dumb people. But I mean, Kansas City, St. Louis, and a few smaller cities in the
Lawrence.
Middle. There's a whole Johnson lot of empty space in Missouri to not be eaten. And so that's actually not the worst idea. In fact, we have not had the Walking Dead Midwest spinoff where it's like, when was the last time you saw a walker? I don't know, 2-3 months ago?
Well,
yeah.
What was it? Live on the plains?
The Last of Us had a whole story arc in Kansas City.
Right, but I mean, let's face it, Curtis, I'm pretty sure that you could survive the zombie apocalypse pretty well out in Dighton. Because once right. you put down all your undead neighbors, it would be a whole long time before people made it out to you.
It's so unlikely that they even get here. No one comes here. No one leaves here.
Just takes one. It's one person dies. And
it'll be me.
And it kicks off the zombie apocalypse. So, but I mean, there, yeah. So anyway, let's get into it. How do you want to handle this?
Okay, so let's talk about this kid.
We gotta.
It won't take long. But she's the framing device of this episode for some reason, so we gotta deal with it. In the past, we discover that this child, whose name I'm not gonna even try, and I'm not even trying to give her a nickname, because what's the point?
Her name is Jenny.
It doesn't matter. I don't care. She had been traveling with Negan for some time, and she is voluntarily mute for some sort of traumatic reason. She's also has a little bit of regression going on because she is very, very attached to a stuffed dinosaur that she has had since probably before the zombie apocalypse, looking at her age. She was probably a baby when it all happened. The framing, in the past part of the narrative, is her remembering a time when Negan helped her search for this dinosaur for hours that she thought she lost. Oopsie doodles, it was just in another bag that none of them looked at before they started looking for the fucking dinosaur, which, as a parent, I will tell you, happens more often than you would think.
Now, in fairness, it's not a bag that they had. It was a bag that Negan pulled off the corpse of a guy. Who tried to rob them earlier and apparently had gotten away and then got himself pretty seriously impaled on a branch of significant size. And it sounded like Negan wasn't the one who killed him. It was somebody else.
Yeah, somebody else took care of that for him.
But of course, they're still hunting for the dinosaur. And this whole sequence is there to remind you that for all the fact that Negan is a bit of a murdering asshole some of the time, he always had a fondness and protectiveness of kids.
He loves the children.
And not in a creepy
way. Don't make it weird.
But
he's very much Wolverine in this way. I felt very strong Wolverine vibes tonight because it's like, this is like the fourth or fifth time that they have hooked Negan up with some kid to show his humanity.
What do they think kids add to it? I mean, they always have a kid. What is added here?
Okay, so here's the thing about kids and women in horror, right? This is a long-standing, very annoying trope that goes into American horror, less so in European horror. See, children and the innocent female character are pure. And therefore, the most at risk in a horror situation. Therefore, when they are put in danger, it triggers in American audiences more than a lot of other countries a greater sense of peril. So, which is why you don't see a whole lot of kids dying in violent ways in American horror, because it's one thing to put them in danger. It's another thing to actually straight up murder them horribly, which is why scenes like Look at the Flowers are so shocking to American audiences. Now, if you're French horror or British horror or a whole bunch of other different countries' horror, killing off a kid in your horror movie, not a problem. We're happy to do it. Just let the kid die, because that's even worse. Just American audiences are a little bit pussies. Pussies are the word I'm looking for.
Right. And it's used as a as a trope in The Walking Dead because it's supposed to be set in a quote-unquote real world, and the idea of putting a child in this dangerous situation in this post-apocalyptic universe has always been something that has been very important to The Walking Dead, to the point where I don't know if they know how to make a show that doesn't put a kid in danger, because...
Starting with Carl.
Yeah. It's become so big on this show. Like, you gotta have a kid floating around to be in danger.
Why? I mean, they learned...
Carl's going all the way across the ocean, and he's gonna end up taking care of some brat.
Well, they finally figured out how to write for children in this particular episode.
The problem is that she's kind of... I don't have a problem with the flashback, which is a character-establishing thing. It's backstory. It's character-building. Great, that's fine. It's the fact that she apparently does have this superpower to hunt down a guy, one person, on a very large island, and without any trouble. And this is not a thing. She's not hardly the first character in The Walking Dead to pull this off. But it's really just over the top here that she's just like, I am going to get in a cooler and paddle across to the island. And then I'm going to immediately find this total random person who is going to pick up my dinosaur and then turn out to be the person who is going to connect with the people who Maggie and Negan are with, because coincidence.
Right. When it was established that it was a black woman in a hood and cowl, for a second I was like, is Negan's wife going to show up? Did she not go to Missouri? Is she going to show up? That would be great. I would love that. But she didn't. So the kid, Drax, was looking for Negan. She, in fact, Tim has said it more than one time, but it is a true fact that she paddles across the Hudson in a 44-gallon cooler with a board as a row your boat.
It's an oar.
Thank you. It's very stupid. It is annoying and ridiculous, and I hated it. What we then learn is, as you say, she is very clumsy and stupid and should not be in this situation, because she immediately falls down and loses her teddy bear, her little dinosaur that she has carried with her since she was a baby, and is too scared to go get it, even though it is not within the reach of the walk. She's like, it's snared by a walker and she gets away, and when the walker like is pawing at her, the bear comes loose. The fucking dinosaur is sitting 6 inches away from this walker's outstretched hand. So she could, with no danger, go and get it. But she does not do that. She, in fact, leaves it there for some random woman to pick it up. And as Tim has said earlier, that woman then goes to the NPCs that Maggie and Negan are hanging out with. Maggie sees the teddy bear and realizes immediately whose it is.
Now, you'll notice that Dustin cannot actually stop saying teddy bear, because in every other piece of media where this sort of thing happens, it is in fact a bear. So kudos to Walking Dead Dead City for at least changing up the thing. There is going to come a moment in this show where people are running and the dinosaur falls to the ground and the camera lovingly holds on it as people come over and kick it or step on it, because then it symbolizes the death of innocence. Because
right.
In this shot,
and she's going to have to leave it behind. There's going to be a moment where the little girl is going to have to make her decision whether she's going to grow up or she's going to get her bear. And it's going to be a life and death situation, not even just for her. It'll be for a bunch of people. It'll be crazy. And it'll probably happen about halfway through episode 6.
Maybe not. Because the end of our little framing sequence here, framing for the episode, because it opens with her and Negan, and it ends with her and Maggie, because right. Maggie has found the dinosaur, and Maggie clearly has a new ulterior motive that has not been expressed, but I'm pretty sure we can all figure out. And so she is going to burn the dinosaur, so Negan doesn't know that Ginny is on the island of Manhattan.
She's thinking about it. She doesn't do it right away, but she's thinking real hard about it. And let me tell you, I'm very irritated by this. Because Maggie is not the kind of person who is going to put another child in danger to rescue her own child. She has never been this kind of person. They have been working really, really hard over the last couple of years to establish Maggie as this person who goes nuts when her kid is in danger. The whole last season, where she comes back to Walking Dead, was her establishing that she is just crazy when it comes to protecting her son. And I don't like this idea for her because it's weaponizing motherhood in a way that I think is crass and really cliche in a way. Like, the mama bear cliche brought to, like, the nth degree of, like, no one else's children matter but mine. And it's just not, it doesn't work for me.
I think you're right in the fact that they're not letting both of them be right.
Yeah.
Different ways. And I think that's one of the things that this episode really kind of makes it clear that they've got something going on with Maggie that could be solved by Maggie just talking to Negan about it.
Right.
And I really don't like this. And again, Dead City is far from the only thing that most conflicts in TV and movies could be solved from the romantic comedy all the way up to the worst horror film by someone going, hey, hang on a second, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And they don't do it.
That's what makes Othello such a tragedy, is that, I mean, that's the biggest, the most famous lack of communication story there is. The only person who is talking to people in the whole play is Iago, and he is absolutely the one person you don't want to talk to.
Right.
If Othello and Desdemona would put aside the fact that they are scared of hurting the other one and have a real conversation, all of this could be cleared up immediately. The whole plot could be, but they're both so scared of hurting the other one's feelings or making the other one feel less than or whatever, that it ends up killing everybody. It's real tired here because I feel like this particular plot point has to be done in a way that is real sensitive and gives it that real tragic twist, or it doesn't work. It just is people playing like soap opera game.
And just a reminder, folks, Shakespeare has been dead for several hundred years, so this is not a recent trope.
Yeah, spoilers for Othello.
But yeah, I mean, this is just, they're trying to do a thing and it's a little blatant at this point. So
I guess we should talk about Pokey now. They're going to keep trying to make Pokey happen. I really, really want them to kill him. I really want for this to not work out for Pokey. I really need for him to die and for it to be almost a secondary thought. It needs to be like somebody just is like, oh God, we have this prisoner still. And they just shoot him in the head, because I just can't stand this character because he is ridiculously boring.
Yes. And what's he for?
Yes.
I guess the whole point of him was to let the Croat know that Negan was in town.
Yes, he has served his purpose, and now Pokey can be killed.
And Pokey
can die in a horrible way now.
And while they were sorting him out, they figured out, you know, well, they figured out he could fight zombies pretty well.
And that the brother that he went and found was, I guess, the ne'er-do-well, the black sheep of the family, and had reached out for help at some point prior to the zombie apocalypse. And so this is the first time anyone in Pokey's family has had a chance to go. And either he found that note or he's been having that note for a long time. I can't remember if he picked it up at the apartment.
I don't remember either.
But anyway, that note explains why he went to look for his brother in New York, because his brother had reached out at, I'm going to say Pokey had the note, that his brother reached out before the zombie apocalypse and Pokey didn't have time to deal with it at that moment. And then all hell broke loose. And now it's 14 years later. And this is the first chance Pokey's getting to get to New York. That's what I am thinking happened. But nobody says it, because Pokey's big characteristic is that he does not speak unless he has to. And that is really annoying to me.
But it gives the Croat a chance to monologue. And what's kind of nice, actually, is that the writers clearly went back and read some Negan monologues and went, well, that's not Negan's arc right now. But hey, we've got the Croats. So let's just give him some Negan monologues. Either he learned very well from Negan's speechifying, or he had a talent for his own, because he's doing that same whole thing. It's, hey, you know, I really want to be your friend. I just want to take care of you. I want to make things great for you. All you have to do for me to do that is dot, dot, dot. And in this case, it's tell me why you're here and who's with you. And we get the strong, silent type from our marshal. And apparently a recurring theme in this, and admittedly, we got a lot of skyscrapers, but the Croat, just like Negan last episode, gets to throw somebody over a balcony.
Right. The Croat has taken up residence in, is it Madison Square Garden?
Mm-hmm.
They got a parade float or a something, an ice cream truck that is going around the city and slowly but surely building up walkers outside of Madison Square Garden, which was how Strand was protecting the tower in Fear of the Walking Dead. I don't think that the memo has gotten up to New York that this is not a super wonderful idea. Although, I will say, I think it's a great idea as a way to clear the streets from walkers. Like, absolutely, this is awesome. Like, you know, this explains a lot as to how people have been able to survive in a place like New York for this long, if that's techniques that they have been using. Pokey is locked in one of the suites at Madison Square Garden, and the Croat comes in to monologue at him, and he tells him all about how his family had been devoured by walkers.
Oh, no, his family was devoured by cannibals.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, friends. This is Curtis from the future. I just wanted to let you know that right here in this section, Tim made a terrible joke about the fine young cannibals, and I will not have it. Not on my watch. No, sir.
I know. I'm going to edit that out. That joke is terrible. I'm editing that one out. I'm leave this part in.
But
not everyone will know.
The fine young cannibals are, in fact, characters in the main The Walking Dead show. They were cannibals, and they were beautiful. And Dustin
called
them the fine young cannibals because they were young, and they were, in fact...
You remember Tasha Yar was one of them?
Yeah, I do, and they drove me crazy.
Because they were so sexy. How did all this...
The joke apparently went right past Dustin.
Well, that's how we get to keep it in now.
Hello again from the future. This is Curtis again. We're not keeping it in.
I'm just thinking about Gareth for a second. Yeah.
And
we followed him over to that summer camp show, and it was so bad. when we covered other things. Anyway, the Croats family was
hiding in the... I was hiding in the post office in Maryland. I don't even know where he was.
It doesn't matter.
And
the world
then
doesn't make any sense.
I went to pee, and I come back, and I smell my family's entrails as they're being devoured by regular folk.
Right. But in the course of this monologue, the Croat sits down to dinner and discovers that there is a maggot in the food that he has been served.
That shot's been used so much, I thought it was going to be a hallucination.
You did? Because
every time there's like maggots coming out of food, it's a hallucination. But I guess not this time.
That would have been a fun way to show that he's crazy. Mm-hmm. Is if he had been like, you've got, there's maggots in my meat, and the little guard who he ends up killing could have been like, that's rice, sir. That's a piece of rice. Like, you're eating rice right now, sir. That's right. And he then still got killed. I would have loved that. That would have been great. But no, it's a real maggot. And he berates the guard, who is not even the dude that, like, had anything to do with the cooking. He's just standing there watching Pokey.
It's not his fault.
Yeah. So the Croat feeds him Pokey's handcuff keys. It's Pokey's handcuff. And then throws him off the balcony to his walker fate, his death. And later, they take Pokey, after Pokey has basically refused to answer any questions, the Croat takes Pokey. Oh, do you want to talk about the methane here?
Sure. So what he has determined, because of course he was in my previous life, I was a scientist, which, you know, I don't know. Have we actually had that many mad scientists in The Walking Dead? We've had a couple. Mostly, yeah. In like the Walking Dead world, what, the spin-off show, the anthology show
for Walking Dead.
But we generally don't have like actual mad scientists, and now we have one. So this is that, yay, I guess. And so he's discovered that rotting things, including corpses, give off methane, and methane is in fact something that you can make fuel out of, which nicely explains the fact that there are running cars in a post-apocalyptic New York, far beyond the point where any gasoline would have stopped being viable.
Right. And so, also, they mentioned more than one time at this moment in this episode that apparently the subway and the sewers of New York are crammed full of walkers. Have been full of walkers for like 15 years. And somebody even says that's what gave the Croat the idea, is all the methane under the city. Foreshadowing.
Sure. Because you know what else methane is? Highly flammable.
Well,
I'm going to be so...
That's how they power their steam engine or whatever the hell their generators is, the methane burning. Because methane doesn't do anything else.
Right. But they have found a way, and this is a thing that is actually, you can do if you have the right tools. And I'm sure you could actually find them in New York City. And you can actually convert it to a liquid fuel. And it's not that hard to modify an engine to run on methane. In the grand scheme of things, right? They've had time to figure all this stuff out.
Yeah.
And the tools and technology are going to be very available in New York.
Yes. Right. But they're also setting up for how we're going to blow up New York later, which of course I'm saying now and on episode 3 of this show. And by the time we get to 6, it's not going to happen. And there's going to be 14 seasons of Dead City.
Well, actually, so SDCC, San Diego Comic-Con, is the weekend we're recording this episode. And along with the new Daryl Dixon trailer, it has been announced that Dead City has been renewed for a second season. So is Daryl Dixon, by the way, even though the first season hasn't aired, it's been renewed for a new season. And we got a trailer for the Rick and Michonne show.
Dude, you don't wait till the morning you're going to milk a cash cow to announce that you're going to do it.
Right.
You can tell somebody last week, I do this every morning, milk it.
Right. So, yeah. So methane, we have a power source. It justifies the lights. It justifies the cars. It justifies all the things that in the other parts of the Walking Dead universe don't make a lick of sense.
In the Croats world, they justify all the things in the Croats world. Doesn't justify how the NPCs have that shit. But we're not going to worry too much about that because, you know, it's a broad stroke sort of situation. The writers don't have time. So the Croat uses some methane to mess up Pokey's brain hole, ties him to a post, and then the guard he fed the key to is brought out to kill Pokey. Of course, Pokey fights the walker to death and then is able to get the key out of his entrails and unshackle himself just in time to be attacked by two more walkers, which he then takes his boot off and bashes their brains hole in, which really, really impresses the Croat. And I guess makes Pokey real talkative, because that's after all of this, when we get the reveal, Pokey like had this note in his shoe this whole time from his brother, who we discovered was dead last episode. And also, Pokey just decides to be like, I'm a marshal. I came here to get a guy. His name is Negan. Ain't ever heard of a Negan before. And now the Croats all like, what?
Well, it's a little worse than that, because our stoic marshal, who is on the quest to bring down his criminal man, cracked pretty much immediately after the Croat starts reading the letter. He's like, stop reading it. It's the pain is too much. I'm a marshal and I came and I'm alone because my cannon fodder assistants got died early on because they were...
Yes. They kept standing in front of my bullets.
I mean, he just folds so fast at this moment. But the point is that we have to get to the revelation that he's after Negan.
Right. You know they're gonna end up assault on precinct 16-ing this whole thing, where Pokey and Negan and Maggie are gonna have to team up at some point to escape from something, and Negan and Pokey are gonna be like, I don't like you, but we are gonna have to work together. And Maggie's gonna be like, this has been my plot for 5 full seasons of this show. I can't have you coming in and bogarting it.
And that's when she'll betray them all. Because that's what we're leading up to. I mean, it's just... Right.
Anyway. Season 2 is going to be the Negan show. It's not going to be the Negan-Maggie show.
Neither one of them is in any danger of dying. These two have so much plot armor. It's entertaining to watch.
We could see Herschel get popped in the head. I'd like to see Negan working out in the backyard and accidentally hit Herschel in the head with a ball bat.
Okay, so I have some real, this show has shown. Showing
interruptions? What?
Well, okay, no. I don't know if they're going to go back to the well of killing a teenager again, especially one of the main characters' kids. I think that Jenny and Herschel are pretty much safe at this point, because on Fear the Walking Dead, they just killed so many main character children. Let's see, there's Carl and Sophia and Daughter Fodder. And Carol and what's his name's adopted son, both of those adopted sons, plus Sophia 2 and Puppy, they have just killed off so many teenagers.
Look at the flowers, girl. Who was that?
Oh, yeah. That was Sophia 2 and Puppy.
Yeah. Okay.
And they weren't even teenagers.
Yeah. They were children. And I just think that they're going to be done with that for a little while. So I have this real strong feeling that Jenny and Herschel, too, are going to make it for a while. They're going to get at least close to get together and be like, oh, we're a young team.
Well, and we don't, I mean, it's as much of a little jerk that Herschel seems to be so far. He is on track to grow up to be the jerk that he is in the comic as an adult. And I think that they have already departed from the comic in enough ways that, sure, you could kill off Herschel, but I don't think they're gonna. And I think that unless their goal is to make Negan a straight-up monster again, they're not going to kill Jenny off.
No. He needs to, like, try to date Jenny if they want to make him a monster. That's the only thing they've spared us from, really.
But that's just, that would be.
I don't think we're gonna go. I think that we're pretty confident that the Walking Dead universe is gonna steer pretty far away from pedophiles.
Well, you guys can talk about the things that you'd like to see. I would like to see some really grade A fucked up shit that's gonna make me super duper uncomfortable.
That would make, I think, all of us very uncomfortable. But I don't see it happening because, again,
there's got to be one guy who's like, come and live with all of my children.
Well, the Claimers, there was a guy in the Claimers that Rick pretty much murdered the fuck out of that tried to rape Carl. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the episode where Rick decides that the power of the human jaw defeats the power of the human jugular, hands down.
You know, I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2, I don't know, a while back when I was going through the story arc of it, you know, and my character gets raped in that video game. It's not like you don't see him get raped, but there's like some weird stuff happens, and then you end up waking up out in the middle of the woods, and you're like, I think that dude just raped me. So you have to go back and murder the shit out of him. I fed him to a crocodile. It was really funny.
Yeah, that sounds nice. So I guess now we have no choice but to talk about the NPCs.
Well, the NPCs are part of the Maggie and Negan storyline, so we can talk about both of them.
We've got tank?
Well, yeah, we've got the guy with the tattoo on his face that looks like the Mike Tyson tattoo, but I guess it's just a scar?
Yeah, it looks like a scar somebody rubbed something in.
And so he's actually, like, pretty high up in leadership. It's him and the bald guy in a tank top and the Latina lady.
Bald guy in a tank top, that sounds like Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
These are, again, because the only survivors of the zombie apocalypse are attractive people. Yes. All objectively good-looking.
Well, I mean, yeah, but we live in the Midwest where most people are rather rotund. And if you're just skinny, you get hot points.
Well, I don't know. I feel like they kept that Redken in New York going. Like, they've all got good skin. And that girl's hair, those ringlets are on point. We're doing pretty good.
The Redken program.
unless he is actually suffering from premature baldness, he shaves his head extremely good.
Yeah.
You know, it glistens nicely and everything.
So apparently, this is we talk about how the Croats live in a Madison Square Garden. Everyone who goes in the Madison Square Garden, no one ever comes out.
Oh, this, by the way, is just a loosely disguised, you can't go in there, it's too dangerous conversation.
Yes. The only person who has ever done this, who has ever gone into Madison Square Garden and escaped, is Tank Top, which makes me immediately suspicious of him. 100% going to betray them at some point.
Oh, easy.
And has been a spy this whole time. As soon as there's like, he's the only one that escaped, and they showed him and he looked real nervous, I was like, nope, he is absolutely 100% a mole. So essentially what he tells them is that, like, when Madison Square Garden was built, it was built on top of the old Penn Station, and which I don't know if it's true or not, probably, who knows, it doesn't matter. This all happened like 50, 60 years ago, and so a lot of the old underground stuff is still there, and his grandpa knew all about it, and so that's how he was able to get out, and that's how they're going to be able to get back in.
Logistically, this could entirely be true, because New York is built on top of a lot of older New York, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of there are books written about the underground, the people who live underground in old parts of New York underneath the street.
Yeah, right. Judds and everything.
So this is, yeah. And this is entirely a possibility. So, I mean, between the zombies, the Chuds, the worm people, and
alligators.
And the methane. The underground of New York is a hopping place. So,
dang, it's a hotbed of awesome destruction.
Exactly.
So they have to, NPCs have to decide if they're going to help Negan and Maggie get into Madison Square Garden. And Latina with the curly hair is all for it. And
Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio
episode. Yeah, and Tank Top is really kind of hemming and hawing because he doesn't want to go back in there because he's a spy. And Mike Tyson tattoo is like, absolutely not.
He's dead set against that shit.
Well, these are two total strangers who have shown up, and it's like, let's go do the thing. And everyone else is like, yeah. And he's like, hang on. We just met you. And when we met you, a whole bunch of our people got killed. Not saying it's your fault, but you guys might be a touch unlucky.
Right. Every single person we know is dead because of you.
I mean, yeah, maybe not specifically you, but close enough. You were there when it happened. So I'm not surprised he doesn't trust them. This does lead to a very entertaining story where Negan is like, let me tell you about a place where there was this guy. He was a lot like the Croat. He built up this place and said, hey, I'm going to protect you, and turn into a little martinet of a monster. And you know, he was terrible. And Maggie's just look at him like, oh, no, do go on. and of course, they've seen the script. Our NPCs are like, well, what happened? Blink, blink. And Maggie's like, well, the people rose up and fought back. And did it work? And Negan's like, damn right it did. And I'm like, surely, surely someone is going to look at Negan and go, it was you, right? Because
it was you.
It's
so yeah, but the only person who's even remotely thinking that is Mike Tyson Tattoo, because he does not trust Negan in any way. In fact, follows him into a quiet place so that they can have a very intense conversation about the fact that he does not trust Negan in any sort of way. Which leads, of course, to the two of them fighting. And instead of coming out of the fight at a draw and developing a mutual respect for each other, Negan kills the fuck out of him.
Starting with the perennial favorite, the cheese grater to the face.
Right.
And, you know, I cook a lot.
I was expecting him to use a cheese grater, right? But I didn't expect him to just do it just once across the forehead like that. Because when I grate cheese, I get in there. I get in there and I move it. I would have thought that would just be muscle memory for him, but I guess it's been a long time since cheese. So,
well, but I mean, at the beginning of this, the likelihood that Negan is going to end up killing this guy is pretty clear, but he tries to talk the situation out, you know? And of course, this guy has gone through Negan's stuff and found the wanted poster and gets his little thing about cannot be trusted. So, I mean, the cheese grater is an interesting choice just because it's not initially fatal. Generally speaking, the number of cheese grater related murders is relatively small.
Seems like it's par for the course for Negan, though. He's like, this will fuck somebody up. I'm taking it.
It's going to hurt. And so I can see Negan, because what happens is not that Negan defeats him through fighting skill or you know, great, you know, or beating him up in a particularly static way. The guy loses his balance and impales the back of his skull on a pipe. And the look on his face is kind of like, huh.
I also think it's probably a lot of, oh shit, because now how am I going to explain this? How am I going to explain this to people?
Well, because he is a fairly large guy, and I mean, it's not like he can just, like, you know, chuck him out a window or anything.
Yeah. Mike Tyson Tattoo tripped.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to
out, you guys.
I am completely innocent. Cannot you see my innocent face?
Meanwhile.
Well, and then Negan gently pushes his head down onto the thing.
He's not quite dead.
Told you not to fight me.
You got lucky.
Maggie is trying to become personal, like, have interpersonal discussions with these NPCs, and it's not working out for her. First, she talks to Tank Top, and Tank Top's all like, gee, I want to have babies with that other lady whose name escapes Dustin at the moment, but doesn't matter. Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio. Gee, I want to have babies with her, but she says it's probably not a good idea, considering that, you know, the city's full of corpses and our people are being killed left and right. And Maggie's like, well, you know what they say, it's never a good time to get pregnant. Like, if you waited for the best time to have a baby. And it's like, what? Like, okay, Maggie, you are here in this situation because you are trying to rescue your obnoxious son from this tin pot warlord. If you just ain't had no baby, you would not be here. Like, don't be telling these people it's never the right time. Just go for it. Like, I think that this lady has, like, thought about it and doesn't want to have a baby in the corpse infested.
Yeah. Welcome back to the time where 1/3 of women die in childbirth. Right. That's now again.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be pre-Caesar, you know, cesareans.
Well, right. We've gone past the conversation that Negan and Maggie have, because of course, when we're having all this Maggie is the villain development here, we have to, of course, have Negan becoming incredibly sympathetic again, because they have their discussion where Negan walks up with a baseball cap that. And on one level, this is really sad.
It's a Kansas City Royals cap, too.
Because he brings this cap that it's been years since he has seen the child who wore this cap. And so he, this is like showing up at somebody's house with a doll to give to the teacher who played with dolls as a kid. It's like, all you can think of is they liked these dolls when they were three, you know?
Yeah, I remember that one time you ate a pineapple. So here's a ceramic pineapple.
Right, right. And the kid would be like, what the hell is this? But it's a very human thing to do. So they had this conversation where Negan gives the backstory on what happened to his wife. And I suspect we make a point, they make a point of him saying there were five people who attacked Negan's wife. Now, Negan's wife is not killed. She's raped. He doesn't say the word, but we all hear the word he doesn't say. And she says, don't do anything about this. And Negan's like, I don't even think I'm going to kill him, which he's going to kill him. And he kills him. I suspect that one of these five people was either a marshal or some other power broker type person.
Well, that's why he's being, because he killed Marshall. Because he killed Marshall. That's
but
one of the reasons.
But it's never actually,
he's after him.
It's never actually said that these people are marshals, but I'm guessing that that's what this is going
to be. Yeah, that's or, exactly what happened. You know.
Or somebody important to this new Babylon thing, because we've gotten enough information that I suspect we're going to learn a lot more about new Babylon, especially since we're getting a season two. But so that's when he put them on the wagon train to Missouri, and hopefully.
Right.
You know, they're not going to end up like the Oregon Trail where everybody dies. But anyway.
Oh, everybody has dysentery all the time now.
Right? So he
Dysentery is like Tuesday. We're all shitting ourselves all the time, constantly in the Walking Dead universe.
He does tell her that he did a very Negan thing. And that is part of one of his character flaws. He said he was going to follow her. And then because he doesn't think he deserves to be happy, he didn't.
Right.
Okay.
Because Negan has always been Negan's own worst enemy. From the point where he was cheating on his wife before she got cancer, all the way up through he sowed the seeds for the saviors being defeated by setting himself up again and again in a lot of different ways to get defeated as the leader of the saviors. He's good at building himself up into a position of what looks like strength and then helping his own downfall later. That's part of the reason why Negan's an interesting character.
The NPCs do this really weird thing at dinner where they like all hold up like a lighter or something before they eat their French onion soup. It's real strange. But it's not worth talking about except for the fact that both Maggie and Negan look at each other like, what the fuck are we dealing with now?
Well, yeah. But it's like anything else. It's a little subculture that's developed a ritual. And it's how religions get started. Mm. So I mean, it's world building. But the thing is, it's world building with characters. None of us did any of us think they're going to live?
Nah, absolutely not.
All right,
I'll be shocked if a single NPC makes it out of the six episode season.
It would surprise me,
especially considering that the main four NPCs that we met, two of them have already been killed.
Sure.
So, you know, the old lady and then Mike Tyson tattoo, and we're going to find out that Tank Top is a spy and he's going to get off. And that's going to leave us with Mary Elizabeth Mastriantonio, and she is going to maybe make it, but I doubt it. But that's only because they're going to need somebody to lead the people. Did we miss anything? Did we miss anything?
I think that's everything that happened. It was a lot of talking.
Oh, we glanced over the part where the lady, the tracker lady shows up, or the scavenger lady shows up with the dinosaur, and Maggie, you know, we kind of talked about that in Jenny's section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maggie finds it and immediately knows who it is, and goes out into an alleyway and ponders burning it. Meanwhile, Jenny, who has a low jack on that fucking dinosaur, has followed it and is watching from the shadows to see what Maggie does. And that's the cliffhanger we end on, is whether or not Maggie is going to burn Jenny's dinosaur to hide it from Negan or not.
I mean, admittedly, the dinosaur's got a bandage wrapped around it because it's got a part of the stuffing was coming out. But I guarantee you there's at least a dozen of those dinosaurs, if not more, somewhere on Manhattan Island.
You and I, we all know, you know it, I know it, the American people know it, that if you have seen a kid's binky and you have recognized that kid's binky as their binky, if you see that, you will know what it is. You will know it immediately. Negan, there's no way Negan's going to be like, oh, what a coincidence that somebody in this New York City has Jenny's dinosaur. He's going to look at it and be like, that's Jenny's fucking dinosaur. What's it doing here?
Here's what I was thinking during that. It was like, I thought that Maggie would know that she's obsessed with that dinosaur and would probably have followed it. So now she's trying to get her to come out of hiding by threatening to light it on fire. That's where my mind went.
Well, hopefully, we'll see. I really think that it would be a really fucking shitty thing for her to do to burn this dinosaur. Yeah. And it would be very much like we're trying to make Maggie into a more morally ambiguous, dangerous character, which is really where they've been going. But I don't think she's going to do it. I hope that Becky is in the writer's room going, we can't have her burn the dinosaur. Like, there are bridges that are too far, you guys.
Negan's been coaching her, though, you know, showing her how to do it, telling her why, you know.
I hope you're right, Dustin, although I would have really much preferred her to sit there and go, no fucking way.
Yeah.
At least an acknowledgement that the idea that this kid made their way to New York City and clearly somehow got across a large body of water in, oh, I don't know, a cooler. and suddenly a dinosaur is just right there. I mean, but at this point, I imagine Maggie is incredibly used to coincidences. She's been in the Walking Dead universe for a long time.
Okay. Hey, I'm part Malamute. I bet I could get in this igloo cooler.
I hated it. I hated everything about what happened tonight.
This was disappointing. This episode was disappointing. And that's a shame because the first two episodes, while not perfect, okay, but still, this is better than a good chunk of the last couple of seasons of The Walking Dead and much of Fear of the Walking Dead.
Right.
But like you said at the beginning, faint praise, the damning.
But again, and I just know because when you know what story structure is supposed to be, and you can see the things that people like the breadcrumbs, but I just know, I feel like I know where the story is going. Mm-hmm. But I also know that these writers are constantly like, well, they think they know because of this, this, and this. Let's make this happen instead. Well, isn't that dumber? Yeah, but at least it's not what they expect to happen.
Well, we will see. We're halfway through. Three more episodes, and then the break between this and season two, because we're getting a season two, and that's... And Maggie and Negan have plot armor. So, everyone else can die! Wahaha. But they won't. So, alright, well, that is where we are with the third episode of Dead City. Did you like it, folks? Are you enjoying this particular version of the Walking Dead universe? Are you frustrated by some of the same things we're frustrated by? You can let us know. You can find us on the various social medias, as long as they still exist. You can find us on Patreon. Look up Zompocalypse Now if you feel inclined to support the show. We would definitely appreciate that if you want to. Give us a rating on the usual platforms that allow ratings and comments, because those help other people find the show. And check out the Outbreak Challenge, because it's a really cool way to get a little exercise in and fight zombies at the same time. What more do you need? Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you, Dustin.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you, Tim.
And as always, folks, we appreciate you listening to us prattle on about the wonderful, incredible story structure and plot developments of the Walking Dead universe, he said. Aha. But we do appreciate you guys listening. Thanks, and we'll see you on our next episode of Zompocalypse Now.
Yay!
Zompocalypse Now is produced and recorded by Timothy Harvey, Dustin Adair, and Curtis Smith for Just Some Guy Productions. All rights reserved.